Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. The show is about to begin.
Welcome to Cavs a Podcast. I'm Nate Smith, and I'm here with
Tom Pestak, booyah,
and
Simo, all the way from Oz,
all the way from Perth, Australia. So we've got a star-studded lineup here on Cavs the Podcast. And how are you guys doing? That's the most important thing. How are you holding up?
Good. Better the last 2 days because the weather's been gorgeous.
Oh,
so
yeah,
we've
been spending
a lot of time outside. I've been doing a lot of yard work. So there's something very, you know, I don't know, human about. Yeah, it's just about, you know, like cutting your grass, overseeding your lawn, you know, borrowing tools from the neighbors. Although it is kind of funny. So my neighbor behind me, I've been borrowing stuff from him. And I felt like, man, you know what? This guy just moved in. Like, I don't want him to think I'm a moose or whatever. So I brought him over a beer and a wet wipe, and I handed them both. And I was like, this is probably the only time anyone's ever going to hand you both of these things at once.
Did he laugh?
Yeah, he laughed.
Nice, but, nice. What about you, Simo? Are lawns a thing there?
They're a big thing here. Perth, we're kind of they call people from Perth sand gropers. I don't know if you've heard that term, because this whole city is pretty much built on sand,
okay.
Which means that the drainage is pretty serious. If you water your lawn, the water's gone very shortly afterwards. There is a lot of bore water here. We have a pretty good water table, so everybody works on their lawns very carefully. But your lawn will die in the heat over here very quickly if you don't look after it. So you can tell who's a serious lawn person and who's not by the amount of sand at the front of their house.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting place over here. We're doing fine. The weather likewise has been pretty good here. I don't know how I'd be coping if the weather was bad. With the homeschooling that we've been doing, you definitely need to have some physical breaks for the kids.
Usually we do, like, so my kids are 16 and 10, and right around noon, usually depending on their schedule and mine, we meet up with my mother-in-law who lives a few blocks away, and we maintain a social distance while we all walk together. and then we go once in the evening and wave at my wife's grandma's 88, and she lives with my mother-in-law, and so we walk by the back window and wave at her, so to keep her spirits up.
Aw,
so
that's sweet.
Yeah, we try, and then I sent Tom, I'll have to send you the picture, Simo, but I stole my 10-year-old's bike last night. And I was riding around, and it was the old the Chris Farley bit. Fat guy on a little bike. So we've been having fun. You got to keep it light. So that's been good.
Yeah, you got to try to keep it light for sure.
How's the TP situation, Tom?
We're good. I told you when we had Jason on the podcast that our man Jesse Mackey brought me a 48 pack.
Okay, so
we're good.
You're still good. Okay.
We're still and good. Yeah.
How's your wife doing with the homeschooling?
You know what? She's not alone. I think a lot of the parents are kind of overwhelmed. So we've all been negotiating with the teachers, like, hey, here's what we'll work on, and here's kind of like going to be the nice to haves. And so there's been a lot of that.
You're putting on your project management hat, and
yeah, exactly.
These are stretch goals.
Yeah, these are stretch goals. Yeah, we're gonna worry about reading and math, and you know what?
And the rest of us, we're just going to take on some technical debt.
Talk about social studies, and we'll go out in the backyard and dig for worms for science.
Nice. We'll just consider social studies technical debt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for forever, right? You went to grammar school, and you learned, like, English and Latin. And so yeah. I don't know what all this kerfuffle is about all these subjects, but, you know, whatever. But what is... So, Simo, in where you're at, are all the kids like being homeschooled right now?
Pretty much. The government was pretty slow to close schools. In fact, the federal government never really actually said that schools have to close. It was a very slow kind of squeeze. But by the time we got to taking our child out of school, there were very few kids left in class. So effectively what's happening now is that if you're an essential worker, there are options at your school. All public and private schools have to provide an option to look after children of those parents. But we were quite lucky in our situation. We pretty much pulled our child out of school. She's in grade one now, as soon as we had the option of doing so. So the schools are pretty empty and the streets are pretty empty. I hear you on the stretch goals. I think yeah. our aspiration... is pretty much if we're all out of our pajamas at some time during the morning.
That's a win. Bonus
totally,
time.
Totally feel you there. That's why I go on the walks, to basically force myself to at least put on sweatpants or basketball shorts if it's warm enough, which it was today. So
on the toilet paper side of things, we were starting to get a little thin on the ground. But about a week ago, my wife she went to one of the smaller chain supermarkets around here, and she happened to wander down. It wasn't even in the toilet paper aisle. There was just this corner of the store that had a huge pile of toilet paper bags just sitting there, and the store was kind of empty. And she walked past it and did a double take, kind of looked at it. And you know, when you find a really good car park on a really busy street, and you think your eyes don't work because you're reading the sign, and you still can't believe that it's just fallen into your lap so easily. So she's kind of looked at it for a while, looked around,
like,
and then
what's the
said,
catch?
Yeah, I'm taking one of these. So she grabbed one and brought it home. And it was like I imagine people in medieval times when they brought home a wild boar for everyone to feast on. It was
you got one of the king's deer.
Yeah, it was a good score.
So I'm curious, because you mentioned the federal government. So what, I mean, what are the government breakdowns in Australia? Like, obviously in the US we have state governments, and they've been the most kind of important and obvious governments here with all the corona stuff. So like, what is it like for you in Australia with that?
Can I start with a disclaimer? Just, I mean, everybody's on this blog is very aware that I'm not American. It's pretty obvious. I lived there for a short time. I have great affinity for our American friends, but I grew up in Australia. I have a necessarily different take on the Australian government, obviously, and the American government. It's and that comes out when we talk about this pandemic. It's not just about science; it's about politics and social norms and all sorts of things. So if anyone has a problem with what I say, just remind yourself that I'm not of.
If anyone has a problem with what you say, they can take it up with Kohl's 741.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
They can ask for a refund.
They can ask for a refund. Our claims department will get right on that.
So actually, this is really funny. I have a funny Kohl's story today. So I was actually...
Wait, I want him to answer the question.
Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay.
Kohl's stories. We're not 2 hours into this yet.
add that to the list. Add that to the run sheet. So the states here, we have fewer states. We've got six or seven states, or some of them
so
are territories.
So they call them states and not provinces?
We've got five states and two territories. Okay. There's no real difference in how they're managed, not in any practical sense. But I would say American states have much more power and sway. It's much more, I understand it, much more of a cobbling together over there, and the federal government has less power. Whereas in Australia, it's quite unusual to see a state take the lead on anything if the federal government is interested in how a situation plays. So it's been, Very interesting. I'd say the main difference here with the whole COVID response was that the federal government could have easily come out and said all schools across the country need to close, right? But they really didn't do that. They left it up to the states. We saw, and I think the political persuasion of the state governments plays a big role as well. There's a state here that has a Labor government, which is the non-conservative side of the political spectrum over here, which is different to the federal government. Now, they approached the government and said, listen, we're going to close the schools. You need to call a press conference and explain to the Australian people why we're breaking away. So they sort of shared the lead there, and I think that put pressure on the government to then – the federal government,
so
that
what,
is, too.
So you have – your main two parties are Labor and what's the other one?
The Conservative Party, or the Liberal Party.
Okay,
it's a little yeah. So you could think of the Labor Party as being similar to the Democratic Party, I suppose.
Okay.
Yeah. In the States, that's kind of how it works.
Is that similar to the Labor Party in England as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you feel like that your politics and the mechanisms are more closely related to the United Kingdom than America?
Yeah, I'd say UK.
Okay. Sure. Okay. Now you have a PM, right? You have Prime Minister.
That's right.
Okay, and then you have a National Parliament.
That's correct. Okay. I'm not sure if you guys would be aware that we've had an awful lot of Prime Ministers over the last decade or so.
I was aware that you had a lot of political turnover.
Yeah. Yeah. So the parties themselves have been in power for the normal amount of time between elections, but. Yeah, politics, like a lot of countries, has got a little bit toxic. But the difference between Australia and the States is that the leader can get removed quite quickly by the parliament if things are going badly, and they'll just put another face up there. Whereas you guys have a lot of power invested in the office of the president. So
yeah, for sure,
for good or ill.
So do you guys like honor the crown of England still? Is that some kind of formality since you were a colony?
Well, they are part of the Commonwealth.
We are part of the Commonwealth, and we had a big vote probably 10, 15 years ago now, in which there was a big push to become a republic and to separate from the crown formally. And the Prime Minister at the time wasn't a fan of it, so when they put up the questions that could be put to the public, it was designed in such a way that would make it very hard for the republic push to succeed. So it was sort of was hamstrung from the start. It was a very popular idea, and I think people would still like to be separated formally from the crown. So yeah, technically we're part of the Commonwealth, but there's a fair bit of antipathy directed towards the crown, as there is.
Really?
Well, yeah. Look, I know the royal family is still fairly popular in the UK, but they're nowhere near as popular as they used to be.
Well, so why? I mean, I guess. Where the rubber meets the road, I mean, what does it really matter at this point? Like, if you were to make that change, what would, like, improve in people's lives? Isn't that whole thing just kind of symbolic?
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. Although, you know, we had a prime minister removed from government by the Queen back in the 1970s.
Oh, well, that's not symbolic. That's pretty real.
that was real. So the Governor General, who is technically answers to the Queen and not the Prime Minister. That's the whole link of the Crown in Commonwealth country.
Okay.
So yeah, the Governor General recommended to the Queen that the Prime Minister be removed, and he was removed. And I think that's where a lot of the antipathy comes from. So, you know, how dare this royal structure on the other side of the world dictate our politics to us? So I think since then the Queen and her advisors have been very hands off, and they kind of know that Australia wants to be independent. We just haven't got the balls to do it yet.
I think, and I don't know if this is still true, but one of the big things about the Commonwealth is that immigration between Commonwealth countries is much easier than with non-Commonwealth countries. Is that also true?
Yeah. The whole idea was that we're supposed to be friends under the one banner. They have the Commonwealth Games, which is a bit like the Olympic Games, just for Commonwealth countries, which is Australia takes that very seriously because that's Australia's chance to really clean up in the absence of the United States.
Well, you also have cricket, which we don't play here, so.
We don't play well here.
I work with several Indian, a lot of Indian people, and yeah, they're very big into cricket.
Oh yeah, yeah, they're really into cricket in Jamaica because that you know, it feels way more British there than American. So you know, it's football, it's football, rugby, and cricket in Jamaica.
Not in baseball, and sprinting.
Unlike, yeah, but it's like weird because there's all the, you know, you look in these other Caribbean countries and baseball is king, and they don't, there's no baseball at all.
No, it all is based on, you know, 17th century colonialism. Sorry.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, the team from Jamaica, they're called the West Indies, through the 1970s and 80s were the world champions. So you just couldn't beat them. They were so good.
At cricket?
At cricket. But that's recently because of the popularity of basketball. So they're no longer a very strong team. It's interesting. Huh. It's changed.
Yeah, and track because of Usain Bolt.
Well, yeah, they're the fastest in the world, no question.
Yeah. Well, that was a pretty good Commonwealth history lesson there, so I'm glad we got that. So have you been I don't want to get you in trouble, but have you been frustrated with the lack of response from a national level? How long it kind of took you guys to get rolling?
I've got to say, on a couple of things to do with this whole COVID-19 pandemic, I've had to change my tune a little bit because it's such a novel virus. It's been hard to tell exactly what was going to happen. We're learning as we go here. As a virologist, I was looking at the early data and thinking this is going to be really bad. If I can tell an anecdote or two to give an idea of how unseriously people were taking it. This was in February, probably early or no, maybe late February. I remember going to drop my daughter off at school and we were a little bit early, so the doors were closed. So we had to kind of stand around with the rest of the parents. My daughter runs off to play with some of her friends, and I go to talk to one of the dads that I'm friendly with. It's Andy. He's this huge 7-foot guy, and he's in his 60s. He's got older kids, but he's also got a 6-year-old in my daughter's class. And he strolls over and sticks out his hand to shake my hand. And I said, not shaking hands at the moment, Andy. I'm going to give you the coronavirus salute instead. he looked at me. He just said, "What? Are you serious, mate? What? He couldn't believe it. This is a beat up, right?" And I was like, look, I don't want to big note myself, but I used to study viruses and this is going to go really badly. You probably haven't heard this, but they are probably going to have to shut the schools at some point in the next couple of months. And he literally couldn't believe it. Fast forward 2 weeks, and he walked past to give me an elbow bump. He's totally on board, as is everyone else, because finally the government started sending out appropriate messages. But it wasn't just people from the government. It was people from representing, say, the AMA, the Australian Medical Workforce Association. You had people from those organizations coming out and saying it for the first time. The schools are going to
have. You guys have national health care?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just curious. Percent.
Yeah.
You're a civilized country. I'm just trolling, Tom.
Carry on.
Similar to Canada in that. Okay. In the structure. Yeah. But a lot of the leadership messaging early on was not coming from the federal government. It was coming from, you know, other leaders in the community, which disappointed me, which meant that the messaging was often piecemeal and a little bit conflicting.
We don't know what that's like here.
Yeah, exactly. most of my Twitter feed is people in the States, so I may not be quite as across it, but I see a lot of similarities. Yeah, the other anecdote, which you might have heard about over there, was that I think it was on a Friday that the federal government stated that on the following Monday they were going to ban public gatherings of more than 500 people. Someone from the media asked the Prime Minister, "So does that mean you're not going to the football on Saturday like you said you would?" And the Prime Minister said, "Oh no, I'm going to the football." So, you know, a lot of the people who are interested in the financial sectors were all saying, hooray, he's sending the right message that, you know, it's
no need to panic. Yeah.
Yeah. And all of that, but all the medical professionals and scientists were facepalming, and talking about the exponentiality. And if it is in the community, we don't have any time to waste. So there was this real tension between the two. And I guess that's still there. So.
Now, do you guys have, sorry, I'm very distracted because I just saw a Doug Flutie Nugenics commercial on TV, which is a boost testosterone levels. I don't know if you know who Doug Flutie is, but he was an American football player, quarterback. So anyway, sorry, very easily distracted. So do you guys have clusters there like we do here in New York and Washington and some of the other places that are getting hit pretty hard?
Yeah, we've got a couple of clusters. We've been very, very lucky. I guess we are isolated fairly well from a lot of other countries, although, you know, once you've got people coming through the borders on planes and boats, et cetera, you are exposed. One of the biggest clusters that occurred was in New South Wales. It's where Sydney is on the East Coast, and that was due to a cruise ship that came on land probably 3 or 4 weeks ago, and for whatever reason, all passengers were allowed to disembark, and there's the generic, if you are coming from overseas, you must self-isolate for 14 days, but that is not regulated in any way, and I think a lot of people just stopped and went back to their various homes. And the cases are not up on the latest data, but I think there's something like 250 COVID-19 cases that are directly related to that cruise ship. Now, that forms a large percentage of Australia's positive cases. You know, I think we're up to about 5,000 now.
Okay.
Yeah, in total, which is, you know, it's pretty good. And we are shaping the curve downwards fairly well, which is surprising and pleasing.
It is, yeah. And so one of the things I wanted to ask you about, and I don't know if you've kept up on the research at all, if you think I'm full of bunk or just like that's not something you want to talk
I'll
about.
I'll preemptively stand on that leg that you're full of bunk. Go ahead, ask your question.
So no, one of the questions is, so I wanted to talk about one of the things that's been coming out in the last couple days is that the R value, which is the transmittability, how contagious the virus is might be a lot higher than initially thought. Initially it was like 1.5 to 2.5, which is means on average one person will infect 1.5 to 2.5 people. Well, it's thought now, some people are saying the R value may be higher, but that the virility, I think, is that the right term of how symptomatic you get when you contract the virus, might be much lower, and a lot more people might have it, but a lot fewer people percentage wise might have symptoms than they initially thought. So can you speak to that a little? Have you looked at any of the research around that?
I was quite up on the research up until about a week ago, when homeschooling started. So it's become another aspirational target for me to get across the latest. I was helping a friend over in Melbourne put together a weekly digest of the latest research, because we know quite a few very busy medical professionals who could use this information, but they're just busy to sit down and research it themselves, which I look forward to you guys if you want to read it. But
absolutely.
I just haven't been across it in the last week or so. Okay. I'm not aware of the R nor value changing that much. I still understand it to be around 2.5 people per infected individual. If that's gone up a little bit, it wouldn't surprise me. The thing that's changed since I've been watching this pretty closely has been our understanding of the asymptomatic transmission. I think early information out of China and WHO were in there doing some investigations in February, they seemed to think that there was not very much asymptomatic transmission at all. They didn't see outbreaks in schools. They weren't seeing lots of teachers getting sick. So I think that informed them in some way. But I think it's asymptomatic adults that have since been shown to be the problem.
Yeah, and just in case anybody listening doesn't understand what that basically means you can transmit the virus while not actually displaying any symptoms.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think the symptoms for everybody has been fairly consistent. You know, they talk about the fever and a dry throat or a dry cough. And when it progresses, you start to have difficulty breathing. I read a report last night that it was talking about medical professionals dealing with patients who were a little bit blue and really struggling to breathe, or struggling to breathe more than they normally would, but didn't seem to think they had a breathing problem. So it can be a little bit sneaky if it's infecting people who don't have other diseases, or, you know, comorbidities, as they call it. A normally healthy person may not even notice that they've got it, even if they are experiencing some symptoms, which, you know, the virus must love. It's a really good way to get around.
Yeah. Yeah. And along with that, I think the symptomatic rate is anywhere from, it's around 20%, right? So 20% of people who contract it will get symptoms, and that's a rough number.
And it changes dramatically across the age groups. Yeah,
and then the asymptomatic transmission. So in Ohio, Tom and I know this, that and Mike DeWine is the governor of Ohio and has been one of the best leaders in the country, yeah. I would say, about, you know, getting the awareness out quickly and, you know, taking steps to protect people and flattening the curve, as it were. And so basically we're told now, don't go out without masks. And that's a big change from, you know, the WHO until last week was basically telling people, well, masks might do more harm than good because you're more likely to, you know, not know how to use the mask and touch your face when trying to get the mask on and off. And so basically it's come out, well, you can get it by breathing, in the same space as someone else. Or, one of the things I read was that they've seen a lot of transmission in churches, and they think part of it may be the singing, in that you yep. transmit the virus out, it projects more. So we're all wearing masks now, and a lot of that is what has come about asymptomatic transmission.
Yeah.
More knowledge is always good.
And a lot of it is guesswork as well. We're looking absolutely. At this as a respiratory virus, and we know how other respiratory viruses are, you know, promoted in the community.
I love how you say that.
Respiratory. Okay, so
yeah.
Sorry.
How do you say aluminum?
Yeah, I'm just going to ask the same question.
You know what?
Aluminium.
Aluminium, yeah. Yeah, you say aluminum over here, people look at you like you're crazy. So.
Yeah. So in my old job, I had an engineer I worked with.
I'm a respiratory.
So is it an eraser or a rubber on the back of your pencil?
We both. We can have it both ways. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
Side note, when I lived in America, my daughter had a few health problems when she was about 1 year old. She had a couple of, you know, nothing critical, but we spent a bit of time at the Cleveland Clinic with her as a patient. And I had to do a lot of telephone calls to set a lot of this stuff up. And I found that if I was talking to anyone on the telephone, I would say who I was and what I wanted, and there would be a long pause. And then they would say, I'm sorry, sir, what? Yeah. Face-to-face communication was fine, but I had to develop an American accent for telephone.
Yeah. And well, as soon and as probably I even a Cleveland accent.
Yeah, right. Right, mom.
Yeah.
Well, gotta go get my car.
Yeah, right. Gotta get Great Lakes. Great Lakes vowel hammering on the A's.
And the Northeast Ohio hard R.
Yeah.
It's funny, my wife would cringe when I did it, but it solved all the communication problems, so I felt justified.
That's hilarious. It's funny because I was on a project last year, and we had a Chinese person on this call, or on our team, and when he was face-to-face, I could always understand him. But when he was on the phone, he would always use Skype. And for whatever reason, the way it digitized his voice, it was so difficult to understand him on the phone, and it was just the weirdest thing. It was like, and we just like begged him all the time, like, don't use Skype, just use your cell phone. It's just a, don't use Skype. We cannot understand you, but he always did. And literally, we kicked him off the project because he refused to not use Skype.
Wow, that sounds like a lawsuit. Because
we literally could not understand anything he was saying.
That was not a very woke group, Nate.
Well, no, when you shut up. I'm just going to leave it at that. Anyway. So along with that, herd immunity. Can you explain what herd immunity is? Because I feel like that's one of those things that people throw around and don't understand what it means.
Yeah, and that's been topical the last decade as well, as we've seen measles hotspot break out.
And measles is insanely contagious.
Yeah, and we've seen hotspots in people get complacent. All right, we know the power of vaccines from the past, but if you don't know of anyone who's died of a lot of these diseases, you can start to think, well, maybe it's not that important. That goes to the flu shot as well, which it's always better to have the flu shot than not, but there's a lot of people, my family included, who often choose to not do it or to not get their kids vaccinated because they've never known anyone who's died of the flu.
Yeah, so the burned hand is the best teacher of the dangers of fire, right? So people talk a lot about these different things in a vacuum, but I think there's patterns. I think when you look at, they take polls all the time on young people and their opinions, and to sometimes older people, it's just shocking. It's like, what? And then you realize, like, oh wait, yeah, you don't have any recollection of any of these things because you weren't around then. And we've lived in a whole, multiple generations of vaccines. So people don't remember what it was like before then. And so you do get complacent.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I'll be interested to see if hopefully sooner than later, a COVID-19 vaccine comes out, how many people that were anti-vaxxers are like, yeah, sign me up for that.
I don't know, man. I saw something how, like, in the UK, they're setting 5G cell towers on fire because there's this conspiracy that's what caused COVID.
That's the most insane thing I've ever heard.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, but, I mean, people latch onto that stuff,
That they used to burn witches.
Yeah.
Yeah, so back to what is herd immunity?
Okay, so we know how we can protect ourselves from germs that we have an effective vaccine for. Okay, you take the vaccine, your immune system is exposed to a particle of the germ, and that's the sort of stuff that I used to develop in the lab. And provided the vaccine is effective, then most people should develop good antibodies against that particular germ. But herd immunity is not just the protection of the individual who's had the vaccine. There are other people in the community that may not have immunity for different reasons. They may not have had the vaccine, or they may be immunocompromised. They may have a poor immune system. Some of these comorbidities that we're talking about are people who are sick for other reasons. So herd immunity is you can think about it in terms of you protecting those amongst us that can't be vaccinated or can't fight off the bug for whatever reason. An example of that could be so the bacteria meningococcus, which can cause meningitis, most people have that living harmlessly in your throat, okay, and it doesn't cause disease, but it can get into your bloodstream and cause infections. Now, if that particular bacteria is transmitted to someone, if you don't have the vaccination, then you'll probably have a reasonable load of that bacteria living in your throat, and you can give that to someone who might get really sick. So that's a good way to think about herd immunity. You're really protecting those people who otherwise might die from something that you won't.
Okay, and one of the concepts around that is the more people in a large group, and correct me if I'm wrong here. I'm not reading off anything. I'm just trying to summarize it or, you know, put this thought into words. The more people in a large group that have an immunity to a disease, the less likely the people that don't have that immunity are to get it, basically.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. You need a large proportion of people to be immune or vaccinated.
Okay.
For her to actually work. Having said that, though, we still don't, if we can translate that to COVID-19, we still don't understand how much of the virus disappears after someone has recovered.
Yeah, it's super tricky. Study.
Yeah, they're doing tests on that right now with people who have recovered. They're looking at antibody level, but also free viral particle level and hopefully viral shedding, which is actually extremely difficult to study.
So can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
There was a local post going around. There's a local doctor in Dayton that, you know, last I checked is not doing well and he's got COVID, and they were asking for plasma donations of people that have already recovered from COVID. Mm-hmm. So like what is that experimental, or is that like a viable way to get him antibodies right now against it, or how does that work?
There's potential for that. Yeah, it's not proven. So it is experimental. They are doing those kind of studies right now, as I've said, from people who have recovered. They're looking at the serum, the different types of antibodies. Those are the Ig compounds. There's a whole range of them. Some of them are in your blood. Some of them are in your mucosal areas, like your throat and your esophagus and your mouth. So they're looking at that now, but if they're giving that to him or they're asking for it, I would hope that he's part of a study and they're not just doing it anecdotally, you know, N equals one. I would hope that they're doing it properly.
Is that a viable procedure for other things where you're like, this guy's
literally
doing...
Tom, that is 100-year-old technology, that they literally had. When did serums first get used around 100 years ago, right?
Yeah. My understanding was that it kind of took off in popularity during the World Wars.
From World War I.
Like replaced leeches as the preferred method of getting the healing powers from one person to another or whatever.
Yeah, you can have an immune response against other people's red blood cells. But generally, if you clean up the blood, you put it through a centrifuge and you pull out the cells and you're just providing the plasma, which has antibodies and a few other.
Oh, okay. So that's the whole point of it. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. I didn't realize.
Yeah.
They often use, a preparation called Ig in hospitals where they've taken out, just the generic antibodies, from someone's blood. And if someone's undergoing like a really full on, systemic inflammation, you can give this person the plasma and it generally dampens down the inflammation. It doesn't necessarily stop the cause of the inflammation, whether it be a viral infection or something else, but it dampens down the inflammation that's been in use for a long time.
So I watched a video or something about, it was like a professor talking about the mechanics of how people die from this. And it started off by like explaining that your immune system, you could think of as having sort of two parts to it, the innate immune system that you're born with, and then like the learned immune system.
Yep.
Right. And so he was saying, he was basically to oversimplify, what I got out of it was that this virus is, you know, not good, but, there's a trigger point at which your body panics and goes, oh my gosh, like the innate immune system is not able to take care of this. Like call in the F-22s and all the, you know, all the heavies and like, let's just like kill the hell out of this thing. And that causes that escalation, is what can cause the problems in like the air sacs in your lungs, which then you can no longer, breathe properly. So that's probably, everything I said may be wrong, but that was what I took away from watching the video. And they were sort of saying like, that's why probably children aren't as susceptible to this, because they have, you know, mostly their immune system is based on the innate immune system, not this long-lived, you know, learned, trigger-happy immune system that's ready to kind of go nova on something that it feels like, hey, you know, we might not be able to handle this. Is that like, am I explaining that right, or did that make no sense?
Yeah, no, you're explaining it perfectly. It's still unknown. I keep talking about this novel virus, and you know, anyone who asks on Twitter or other emails I get about it, I keep saying we're going to have to wait to get the answers. They still don't know. I mean, how many people have died of this worldwide? Hundreds of thousands so far, right? I think we have a fair idea of exactly what the pathology is as the virus is causing the issues in the lower lungs. We still don't exactly know what it is, though. We know that the red blood cells are coming into the lungs with a certain level of CO2. And in someone who's got this disease, a serious amount of this disease, those red blood cells are exiting the lungs with the same amount of CO2. So for some reason, it's unable to exchange CO2 and take on oxygen. They're not sure if it's because the little lung sacs are filling up with fluid and things are getting trapped. There is a theory at the moment that it's got to do with the receptors on the cells that are in there, that the synovium that kind of forms the barrier between the lungs and the blood is becoming thickened and inflamed, and the cells just can't do the normal exchange of gases that they normally would. That's still unknown. So I don't know what you're talking about, the innate immune system and what we call the acquired immune system. You're probably right that there's a level of immaturity in kids that is stopping them from getting this disease. We're still not sure what that is. Although kids, you know, my daughter has an acquired immune system. She gets the flu shot every year. She's had plenty of, you know, kids are vaccinated from very young, and from the age of, well, my son is about one, his acquired immune system is learning lots every day. I mean, he had a stomach ache today that lasted about 6 hours. There was a lot of vomiting. I'm very confident that he won't suffer from that exact same bug again, because his system is building.
That's the other thing I had a question about. Mm-hmm. I was surprised when they started talking about not knowing how long your acquired system will provide more or less an immunity against something. So my only reference point is like, yeah, when I was young, I heard that if you get chicken pox once, you'll never get it again. And then as I got older, people were kind of like, now you can get it again, but you're probably good for, you know, a couple decades.
Yeah.
And that now I'm reading like, oh no, like there's certain things that your immunity lasts for like months and then you could just get it again. And so what is the mechanism that causes that time span to where certain things, it's like, oh, you got that vaccine, you need another one in a year, or, oh, you got that vaccine, you won't ever need it again in your life, or, oh, you got that stomach bug, you'll never get that stomach bug again, versus, oh, you got that, but, you know, you might get that more or less same thing, you know, not in a couple of years. Like, what? Yeah.
Here's where I get to put on my PhD hat and say, this stuff needs a lot more study, because every single bug, every virus and bacteria is different. When it gets into your body, they all have a certain level of what we call immunogenicity. So they stimulate a certain level of immune response in a person. For a virus or a bacteria that you need a booster shot for, that would be based on information that shows that the majority of people's immunity would wane over time to that particular pathogen.
So how does that wane? Does your body have just a lower antibody count at that point?
It's not so much about the antibody count. It's down to your white blood cells, your T cells and your B cells that produce the response. It's your B cells that produce antibodies, and it's your T cells that induce what Tom was talking about, which is the cytokine-based response. You might have heard of the cytokine storm, which is kind of what Tom was talking about when you have a massive overreaction and your body just goes crazy. So that's down to the T cells and a few other types of immune cells. The thing that I think goes missing, you have things called memory T cells. There's different types of T cells. And some of those T cells, that are specific for a particular pathogen, you might have a good circulating amount of those T cells in your body for the rest of your life. Or those memory cells might just go, you know, quiescent. They might just hole up.
That's a good word.
Yeah. Oh, did I pronounce it right?
You did, actually. I use a software that quiesces on occasion, so I'm familiar with the word and I enjoy it. So,
as I said, it's different for each disease. We don't really know why you need boosted. We don't know why it wanes for some bugs.
That is something that we do track, but we don't necessarily know the back end mechanism. Like need a tetanus shot every 10 years, but why you need a tetanus shot every year is we may know that. We certainly know why better than we do about CVD-19 or COVID-19 right now, but when you refer to it in common conversation, is it COVID-19?
It's the Kung Flu, Nate.
It's not.
Kung Flu. That's so funny.
It's not. That's terrible, Tom.
It is not terrible.
It's the Rona, and we all know that.
Rona.
So how do you refer to it?
I would usually say COVID-19.
Okay.
That's what I say when I'm talking to people at work. Yeah. I say the virus.
I say, or the coronavirus. Or actually, this is really funny. My daughter was telling me that if you talk about coronavirus on YouTube, then you are somehow a PSA or something and they demonetize you, which makes no sense. But that's something that happens. So she was watching a podcast and they were talking about how, we can't talk about what's going on in the country, but we can say, that the Backstreet Boys reunion tour is going on in the country. And if you know someone with tickets to the Backstreet Boys reunion tour, don't, associate with that person with tickets to the Backstreet Boys reunion tour. And I hope that you don't get tickets. So it's like, so that's if you hear that on, you don't have any tweens yet, but if you hear that on their podcast, that's what they're talking about, or on their YouTubes, that's what they're talking about. So,
Nate, are we defending against demonetization on Cavs the Blog?
We are not. When we have monetization, maybe we can.
And then we can think about defending.
We have what's called novel monetization, where we've never been monetized before. So, No, we are not defending against demonetization. So,
we can call it whatever we want.
Yeah. So, in terms of, one of the things I wanted to bring up with you, have you heard of this new study around the BCG vaccine, which is the tuberculosis vaccine? And one of the things that they're discovering is that countries that have a larger, that have a national tuberculosis vaccine program, like India, seem to have a lower mortality rate than countries that don't have that in terms of COVID-19. And one of the things was a thought that perhaps immune systems, because of the BCG vaccine, are, I guess the term was, better calibrated to respond to COVID-19 than if they had not. I did read just now that there is a 4,000 person clinical trial going on in Murdoch Children's Research Institute in Australia. So, that's something you might want to follow. But have you followed that at all, or any comment on that, or any thought about how that might be plausible, or is that just seem like pie in the sky?
No, it doesn't. I think it's potentially going to make a difference. I used to work at the MCRI back in the day, and one of the I wasn't working when I worked on this particular vaccine, but I worked on a vaccine for rotavirus, which you probably know is pretty bad for kids.
Interestingly, my daughter my 16-year-old got rotavirus the year before the vaccine was available in America, and she was hospitalized for 3 days. So, yeah, it's very scary.
Yeah, it's bad news. So we were looking to boost the mucosal immune response, right? So the mucosa in your body, that's, your mouth, your esophagus, your breathing airways, is like your first line of defense, right? It's this wet surface, and your immune system, a large part of your immune system is designed to try to catch things at that point. and kill it before it gets into your bloodstream. So our vaccine was focused on boosting the immune response or the IgGs across that mucosal surface. And I'm not surprised that any kind of vaccine that boosts that system would have could provide some cross protection to other pathogens coming in the same way. So you're effectively increasing your immune surveillance. You've got more immune cells. Yeah. So I think there could be some efficacy that came out of it. I don't think it's going to be a cure-all. We really need a vaccine that is.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing because we can actually use the term. It's not a panacea in the actual way that the term is supposed to be used.
It's meant to be.
Yeah.
How about that?
Nice one. I think your true calling is in immunology, Nate. I think you need to go back to school.
No, his true calling is following idiots on Twitter all day.
But that is a calling. It's not very true. Well, that was an awesome answer, and I'm really glad I asked the question. I'm wondering how long BCG vaccination is good for, given our previous conversation.
Yeah, good question.
And I'm going to hot Twitter this right now, because that would actually make me really happy, because my wife has had the TB, the BCG vaccine, and it is protects against serious TB diseases, according to healthed.govt.nz for New Zealand, for 15 years. So if the Kiwis are right, my wife had 15 years, so she still should be good.
15 years? That sounds about right.
Okay. Yeah.
Wait, are the people from New Zealand referred to as Kiwis?
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Yes, they are.
I did not know that. Where does that come from?
The bird, the Kiwi bird and the Kiwi fruit are both native to New Zealand.
No way.
Yes.
Dude, I love kiwi.
And the small, flightless bird, the kiwi.
Kiwi is like the strangest tasting food. It's got flavors that no other food has, I think.
I mean, don't you agree?
Like, what else tastes like a kiwi?
Kiwis are like weird kinda, because like they have really tart, weird texture, too.
Yeah, it's kind of tart. It's kind of sweet. Sometimes it tastes a little bit like almost metallic in your mouth.
It's got a little bit of an umami flavor to it, too.
A what?
Umami. You don't know what umami is?
Is that like eel?
No, umami is like soy or like when things are described as savory, they often have an umami flavor. A lot of people say it's the fifth taste like, have you ever heard of
it's like sweet, salty,
savory, like a good bitter. Cheese will have a nice umami flavor. Or they'll talk about an umami bomb. Like a lot of people like that will like a bit of raw egg, or not raw, but like an over easy egg on like something. It gives it an umami taste. Noodles, Japanese noodles are always often referred to as umami taste. The word is Japanese, I believe. So.
Gotcha. Yeah. So speaking of raw eggs, former Cleveland Indian Joe Charbonneau apparently used to just eat raw eggs.
Ugh.
I'm reading a book, 27 Men Out, about people that have pitched perfect games, and it's just a great book, and it's got all these anecdotes. So I was reading the one about, you know, Lenny Barker's perfect game, which next year will be the 40th anniversary of Lenny Barker's perfect game. So I was reading that, and it talked about how Joe Charbonneau was totally crazy. And so they started saying all the things he used to do. And one of them was he used to just eat raw eggs, like including the shell. Like, he didn't do, like, the Rocky. Yeah, right? That's what I'm saying. He didn't do, like, the Rocky. He, like, literally would just pop them in his mouth.
I mean, I guess if you need the calcium.
Yeah, exactly.
Ugh, that's gross. I would feel like you could get like diverticulitis or something from that.
Well, I'm sure Joe Charbonneau wasn't too worried about that.
Probably not.
Nate, I'm reading here about BCG. It says this is the Australian schedule. It says revaccination is not recommended because of a lack of evidence about efficacy. So take that for what it is.
Efficacy that for was... TB or for...
Yeah, TB.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. So, yeah, my wife, because she's in healthcare has and did TB direct observed therapy, has had a TB valve, which is not mm-hmm. common in America, but is common in other countries. So,
mm-hmm. so why isn't it? Why do we not need TB
because
vaccines?
We pretty much wiped out TB in America.
Yeah, but like, how do we not just get it from going to like India or something and bringing it back?
Well, when you travel overseas to countries that is prevalent, they recommend there are many vaccines that you are supposed to get if you travel to certain countries, actually, but they don't make them widely available here because they don't. It's not really an issue.
So why, when I give blood, do they always ask me if I visited the UK between like 78 and 83? I never understand that. Like, what is that about?
Mad cow disease, isn't it?
Mad cow disease?
Oh, Crutchfield. Is Crutchfelder's Jacobson syndrome? Is that what mad cow is?
Yeah. Well, that was a bit later. That was in the 90s, wasn't it?
Oh, okay. Yeah, they're related, but they're not the same thing, right?
Yeah.
They're both based on prions. Okay. And yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah, I gave blood the other day and it was, yeah, there's a whole list of strange questions. Like, I didn't understand why they were asking me if I had aspirin in the last 24 hours or 48 hours. And then I said, well,
it's a blood thinner.
No, because some people are allergic to aspirin. And so they mark blood that has had aspirin and blood that hasn't had aspirin in the blood supply.
Mm.
Hey, can I just say, well done and congratulations on doing that. Giving blood, it's such an easy thing to do. Very few of us do it, but it has such a huge impact on our health systems. There's someone else that a couple of weeks ago as well. I was really, really super impressed to see it. So
good on you, Nate, for taking a break from reading idiots on Twitter to do something truly noble.
Here's the thing. It was like you're sitting there.
I want to reinforce this positive behavior.
Oh, yeah. So Tom is so sick of me bitching about things I'm reading about Twitter in our chat feed. Like last night, I was just beside myself over this mess in Wisconsin. I said, Tom, I'm just going to defriend all my conservative friends. I'm not going to talk to them anymore. I'm going to cut that side of my family out. I'm just, that's it. That's what I'm doing. And Tom was like, well, you know, if I don't have the time to go publicly denounce the shenanigans in Wisconsin on Twitter right now. So if you feel like you do what you feel like you need to do, it's basically Tom's response. I was like, okay, maybe I should stop being an asshole to Tom was my answer to that. So there you go.
Our relationship is like an old married couple.
indeed. Well, I think Tom Tom's the only one that returns my text is basically what it is. Tom's too worried about me to not return my text. So, anyway, speaking of things that make me mental, so I don't know if you have followed the whole anti-malarial drug, debate, chloroquine. Am I pronouncing that right? Do you know?
Yeah. Well, I think spot on there. Oh, chloroquine.
Maybe, I want to hear how you pronounce it.
Yeah, chloroquine. Okay.
Chloroquine, yeah.
Okay. And basically, there have been clinical trials that show it may or may not help alleviate COVID-19 symptoms. And obviously, it needs a lot more study. What's your opinion of A, the whole debate, and B, you know, whether this is a good idea for people to be prescribing it? And you can choose whether or not to answer the second question, because that was kind of loaded. Yeah, sure. So
I knew that there was in vitro information that's, you know, in test tubes information that showed that it was able to inhibit the virus. That's coronavirus. Okay. Now, I know that it's obviously because it's been used for other pathogens, it's been through human studies before, so we have a fair idea of the toxicity to our own human, you know, health and the various doses that you can tolerate. So it's able to be prescribed for various reasons. So it's not a new drug. It's something that we have in our armory. if they've already got doses figured out that are not toxic and they think that it might help, then I think it makes sense to include it in any kind of, you know, antiviral regimen. But again, it's experimental. We've got to really look at the data carefully. Now, you've talked about the clinical trials that may or may not show it. I'm not across the data there. I think it'd be pretty obvious if it does, because this virus has got a pretty high lethality rate, and a lot of people are getting very sick. You should see some.
At least once you're symptomatic, yes.
Yes, that's right.
Well, so that's the crux of what I don't understand is, so is that not a function of the virus? Is that a function of your immune system? That it's like the virus itself isn't any more deadly than certain other viruses, but there's not this sort of like almost linear, you know, immune system response to it. You have this bimodal distribution where it's like, oh, you got all these people that just are totally asymptomatic. And then you got this other percentage of people and it's like, holy crap. If they don't have ICUs and ventilators and all these nurses and like pretty decent health otherwise, like they're goners because they've reached some kind of point of no return. Like, is that a function of the virus or is that a function of an individual immune response to the virus?
I don't think you can separate the two. It's how the virus is interacting with that person and their immune system. At this point, you can't separate it without a lot more study. And you know, this virus is scary because it's so insidious. You can have someone who's had it for, you know, up to 2 weeks that is not feeling particularly bad, right? And then it gets into the wherever it is, into the synovium of the lungs, and really starts doing some damage. So you know, there are very few viruses that seem to act in such a slow and steady way for those people who are susceptible. And the fact that we've got, you know, people in their 40s and 50s who seem to just bounces off them, and people who are a little bit older that are, you know, it just flicks the switch and they're suddenly in a lot of trouble. It's quite incredible. So
do you guys see, like, Boris Johnson is in the ICU right now?
He is, yeah. So my wife's cousin is actually her cousin's husband, but it's 6 degrees of Stark County. We're in Stark County, and he is the first person that has been intubated that has lived and been released and then been extubated and released that's had COVID-19. So he's unbelievably fortunate because everyone else in Stark County who's had that has passed away or is still intubated. So yeah, it's super scary, and I mean they really have not figured out a rhyme nor reason to why some people are getting it, some aren't. One of the things that I had asked somebody, I'd told them I was going to talk to you, and they had asked me, well, does blood type seem to affect who's getting who's reacting to this virus and who isn't?
Not that I know of. I think that's okay. Something that would have been apparent pretty quickly.
Yeah, it feels like that. Are there viruses or infections where certain blood types are more susceptible to those?
Oh, now you're testing my... I can't remember off the top of my head. I'm sure there would be ones that attack certain blood cells, but I don't think they're the big and common ones. Maybe I can research that and pop it in the comments.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. I was just curious.
Take it for later.
So, yeah, and as far
so
as
So what your... questions do you have for us?
what would you like to know about the consumer packaged goods industry? Yeah.
What would you like to know about the defense industry?
What would you like to know about Kubernetes clusters and data science infrastructure?
Guys, I listen to you guys riff off each other podcast after podcast. I don't need any particular – I feel like I know a lot more about your lives than you do about
it. Yeah, you probably do.
Yeah, that's probably not a good thing.
It's always entertaining and educational, so you know, don't stop.
I feel like this is far and away the most educational one we've ever done. So I really appreciate you being here and doing it. I have learned a lot. I hope you have, Tom.
Oh, totally. Yeah. No, I mean, when you answered that first email from me, it was amazing because I was like, you know, I've spent way too much time watching YouTube videos, reading articles, talking to family that are in the medical field. And it's like some of this stuff was just really bothering me. And then, you know, you sent one email and I was like, yeah, okay. Like, I mean, it just kind of put me at peace. It was informative. It was pretty upfront about, yeah, here's what we know, here's what we don't know. So I really appreciated you taking the time to do that. It was, that was awesome. So thank you.
It was fun. And as I said in my email, I can't believe my son stayed quiet enough for me to actually write it.
So a couple more things I just want to go over. So one of the things I just want to say about chloroquine, and then, you know, the fear is that if it's overprescribed, you're going to have people that are affected by the side effects of the drug, because it's not a drug without side effects. And it definitely for people with heart issues and that kind of things can cause real complications. And the other thing is that you can produce shortages for people with things like lupus that actually need that drug. So that, you know, a real danger there, but just wanted to qualify that. And then the other thing that I wanted to ask about was what do you feel like, what do you think of this NBA bubble idea, where they basically go to a closed off quote unquote community in Las Vegas and basically have the rest of the NBA season? Now, obviously it feels like a ridiculous priority at this point, and they're talking about doing rapid testing for that. Do you feel like any of that is realistic, or are we just being silly?
Well, I don't know. I think if they are that determined, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of money involved in a functional NBA season for a lot of people, a lot of economies. And, you know, where all the countries are dealing with pretty significant economic stress, if they thought that this might have a positive impact in a variety of ways, economic and, you know, social happiness, you get to see your team again, maybe it could be worthwhile. It would be experimental. And I think America would be probably pretty well set up to maybe try a world first bubble like that and show if it can be done. And then it might actually take off, because prior to a vaccine becoming available, you know, I know it's on your run sheet. What's the realistic timeline for everything to get back to our normal way of life? Until a vaccine is widely available, normal is gone. So, you know, that's the reality we're in. And I think it's still dawning on people how long this might actually take. So I think we need to start looking at new ways of doing things. And maybe the bubble idea is a good one.
Yeah. So, yeah, along with
Nate. Yeah. Can I follow up? I want to answer this too.
Do whatever you want. It's a free flowing conversation, Tom. I don't know why. When have you ever asked me my permission to express your opinion before?
Well, you know, Simo just said it. These are not normal times. So, no, but I was going to say that I think it's a good idea. But Nate, you remember getting dunked on by Jameel Hill, right? For, you know, for insinuating that a logical, rational thing being, in this case, that, you know,
we're
celebrities
gonna give
tests that travel to NBA players all the time, and that, you know, are exposed to so many different people that travel a lot, would be good candidates to test. So the PR nightmare that they would walk into if they were like, well, don't worry, like, we're going to play because we've tested everyone. Meanwhile, there's not enough tests. That would just be, especially right now. So I don't know what it's like in Australia, Simo, but in America, you can't be an American unless you have super emotional takes about like everything. So like, for example, you'll hear this in America all the time, something about like, oh, we should pay teachers like CEOs because they're the real heroes, right? Absolutely no rational discussion about like scalability or like, why are there so few CEOs? It's just this emotional, like, these people are heroic, ergo, why aren't they, you know, the rich people? And so right now, and I love healthcare.
75% of people that leave the NBA are broke within 18 months.
Oh my God. Don't even trigger me. I will lose my mind. But so right now, the new one is going to be healthcare workers, which, I mean, hey, I'm fine with celebrating.
Oh, not just healthcare, Tom, grocery workers.
everyone. You know, my buddy is a manager at a Walmart, and I'm like, I was like, you need to cash in on this, man. You're a freaking hero. And he's just laughing. I'm like, no, man, you're putting your life on the line. You're an essential employee. But the reality is that that's where America's mind is right now. So if you did this and it was like, oh, no, it's okay because, you know, these people are special and we did all these. No one wants to hear about anyone being special right now other than, and I think it's fine. I mean, I'm not opposed to this. I'm just saying this is the way it is. The healthcare workers and all the people that are really on the front lines fighting this. So I just think it would be a PR nightmare if you were like, oh, we're going to play because like we went ahead and did, we got all these tests ordered and we got this special program that we can track, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, sorry, the rest of you guys.
Yeah,
like,
I think it's pretty tone deaf until there is universal testing.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
That said, I think we could all use some fun and distractions like the NBA, and I think you could totally pull off. And I like where you were going with it, Simo, where you were like, you know, if you have the ability to do it, that's someone's got to be the guinea pig for how are we going to go back to some normalcy.
I love that it's like all these analogies, like panacea, it's not a panacea, and guinea pig that, had their origins in, medical history are actually like, they literally are, not literally, but they figuratively are guinea pigs, and we're only one, level of abstraction removed from the actual use of a guinea pig in this
day. Yeah. And who knows, maybe even COVID-19 will get us to properly use literally and figuratively.
I doubt it. I doubt it. Did you have a question in there, Tom, or did I interrupt
no,
you?
No, and I will never politely ask to interrupt you again after first getting trolled for doing it. That response right there. So
what
go back
was the
to
question?
The normal,
sorry.
If it's okay. No, it wasn't a question. I said I wanted to weigh in, and I did.
Oh, okay. Sorry. So do you feel like...
I probably could have said, I think that would seem tone deaf, and then muted my mic, but you know me. Why say something in a couple words when you could just rant for a while? That's my effort.
It never stopped me before.
Yeah.
Brevity,
look it up. It's a great speech by Winston Churchill.
Brevity is the soul of wit.
Brevity. He wrote a memo to his War Department in, it was in 1941 in the late summer, early fall. Literally, civilization hung by a thread. The Blitz was going on, and Churchill felt it was so important to tell all of his English-speaking brethren to stop the poppycock and get to the point. And he actually wrote a memo about this, and it's awesome. And so that's like usually the first lecture whenever I'm teaching tech writing is to point out that, look, all y'all think tech writing is a blow-off class and it doesn't matter and you can go be a good engineer or whatever and not know how to communicate. I'm here to tell you that Winston Churchill, during the darkest hour, actually thought it was so important to get points across clearly and succinctly that he wrote a memo to his entire war staff about it. Boom.
Boy, you took a while to tell that story, though.
I know. The lesson was lost on me.
So do you...
You're the cautionary tale.
Yeah, I am the cautionary tale. Do as I say, not as I do.
I've been demonetized.
So there's an email that goes around. It's like a style guide that says how to send emails with military precision. And they're all about, you always start with your bluff, bottom line up front. And then you have like, do you do that?
The bluff goes on PowerPoints a lot of times. We call it a bumper sticker or something, or a bang box is the other one.
Nice.
So like, you'll put it on the bottom and you'll make it like an obnoxious color. And you'll put bluff, which, like you said, is an acronym for bottom line up front.
Okay.
And then it's usually a one-liner. Like, what are we really talking about here?
Yeah, see, I like to do my emails in order of importance. I do the bluff, then I do the this is what I'm asking for or this is what I need from you. And then I'll do at the bottom is like, here's all the background information if you really want to read it.
Yeah, a bluff is really just a too long didn't read is really what it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So back to our bubble question. What is the real, like, when do they have to have, when do they have to go into a bubble and play the playoffs for this season to get, you know, in the books, like for them to actually have a playoffs? Like, how late is too late?
I just don't even think you do it. I mean, did you listen? Did you watch the podcast with like LeBron and Richard Jefferson and Allie Clifton and
no? And Channing? So LeBron's like all the way out on that idea, right?
LeBron was saying like, I mean, everyone's going to be out of shape, and he answered a Richard Jefferson question, I think, saying the question was like, how long would it take you to be prepared to play a playoff game? And I think he said like it would take 10 exhibition style games and multiple weeks before he would have any chance of playing in a playoff game without risking like injury and stuff like that. Jesus. So
it's like a month or something, he said, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And then was it, who was it, Zion, or who was it that said like, yeah, I don't have the ability to like touch a basketball or lift a weight or
do anything.
Yeah, there's
more than one person like that. Like if you don't have a gym where you're out at, you can't just, you know, go to the local Y.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that brings up a question that was on my topic sheet of how fat have you gotten since you started self-isolating?
Oh my God.
Have you gained? Okay, have you gained the COVID-19 yet?
No, I've lost weight, Nate, because
of course you have.
I no longer go out and have a massive 3,000 calorie lunch at an Indian buffet three times a week. So I'm practically starving because it's like the kids are eating SpaghettiOs and Lunchables, and I'm like, no.
Yeah,
and
see, so my problem is I have more time to cook now. So I don't come home and just throw something down. Like tonight I made flank steak, and the night before that I cooked like this delicious chicken on the grill, and it's like, and then of course I'm eating leftovers at lunch, but I'm not getting enough exercise is the biggest issue. Cause like, at least I would walk around a nut, but basically my exercise is I'll walk for a half hour, 45 minutes at noon. And then I'll go walk for another half hour, 45 minutes in the evening. And you know, I'm not doing weights. I'm not doing any calisthenics or anything like that. Calisthenics. What am I, 70?
How do you say calisthenics in Australia?
Calisthenic.
Oh man. All right.
They just say exercise.
We just need to let Simo talk for a while.
Oh, I know. It's so great. So you don't think you think they need at least a month. You're agreeing with LeBron there, Tom.
Yeah, I do. I just think there's too many issues and you start risking injury and that'll create labor issues with, I just see it as a lost cause, to be honest.
A lost season?
That's what I think. I mean, I don't know what you guys think, but.
Okay. See, I think if they can get back by like August, they can, I think that season, they did it by August. They could go September, October, and then kick off next season in like January or something. But beyond that, I think August is probably the drop dead date. And that's a terrible analogy. metaphor.
and it would have to be in a bubble, right?
At this point, we don't have a vaccine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't see him doing it either. I think it's going to be lost. Yeah. Unless they agree to have a championship based on something else, it might be some kind of, best of 10 free throw shots from your gym.
Well, they're going to start virtual horse.
Yeah, exactly.
They're already doing a 2K20 tournament where the players are all playing each other, and all these 2K20 purists are like, yeah, these guys are terrible. Why are you showing these guys? Show people that are actually good at this game.
So I saw that.
That was interesting.
The NBA app is sending out more alerts than it ever has. and that's one of them. It's the 2K challenge.
Yeah. I don't know who it
that's
was.
Funny.
It might have been you or somebody else, but it was just like, you know, stop spamming me, NBA. This is getting ridiculous. I think it was you that tweeted
wasn't
it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So are you doing anything to keep in shape? Because I know you're a runner.
Yeah, a runner and cyclist. Was a triathlete many years ago when my body obeyed commands. It's interesting. My level of exercise hasn't been great. If my wife is busy at work, I don't get much exercise at all. I'm pretty much here with the kids nonstop. I get some walking in, but that's all. But her hours have actually reduced. In some senses, one part of her job is her private work has kind of dropped off the cliff. So she's now home a lot more, and my fitness is on the way up. I'm actually able to get out for a jog and a ride every couple of days.
Yeah, I guess you can jog because there's nothing stopping you. Do you jog with a mask on?
No.
I don't walk with a mask on. It seems a little
You've just got a social distance. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'd say my fat levels are about the same or going up because the other side of it is my alcohol intake is definitely
well. That would be the other
definitely
thing,
fine. Yeah, and that's a direct result of the homeschooling, I think.
So, what's your drink of choice?
I'm a gin man.
You're gin. Oh man,
there you go. Me too.
I can't do it all.
Oh, that's the only one I do.
Yeah, I'm a rum guy. That's my hard liquor, and then, of course, if it's not that, it's beer, and then occasionally wine.
Yeah.
I'll do vodka every now and again. But
I don't discriminate. I'm given a choice. Yeah.
Okay, so wrapping it up here, what's the stupidest thing you've done during quarantine? And I think Tom has a story about this.
Yep. Oh, I thought. Oh, you just want mine first?
Yeah, you kick it off.
Simo's like, I don't do stupid things, so I'm not gonna say.
I don't know if it's stupid, but I tend to, in certain situations, react with a large project which often costs money, and I ask my permission. Permission of my wife after the fact.
Uh-huh. So, are you like me? Do you collect hobbies?
Kinda. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you get so into something, you got to have the best and all that, you know.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't like cutting corners. So if I get into it, it's whole hog and it becomes a bit of an obsession. Because I was a lab scientist and I haven't been in the lab for a decade, I get these urges to start, being a bit of a scientist at home. So a couple of years ago, I started making my own soap. and actually started selling it. I got a business name and the whole deal. Which is, you know, I've done a little bit of that, but it's gone on the back burner since I had a second child. But the latest thing is that because of the lack of hand sanitizer in Australia, I don't know what it's like over there, but you can't get it anywhere. You can't buy ethanol from anywhere. So I went and bought a still, and I'm going to start producing it myself.
Nice. Well, the beauty of that is you can't go blind with hand sanitizer if you make methanol instead of ethanol.
Yeah, I'm thinking of pulling off the methanol and selling it to people who are dumb enough to buy it and keeping the good stuff for myself. Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's a good idea. Well, I've heard you can do – can you get isopropyl rubbing alcohol there?
I think you can make it, but it's not as easy as methanol.
Well, no, I mean, can you buy it there?
Oh, no way.
Buy it – oh, you can't? It's just nothing because – You can make your own hand sanitizer with aloe and isopropyl rubbing alcohol.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. But, yeah. So ethanol or isopropanol do just as well at destroying the wine.
Yeah, interesting. So you're making your own soap. Nice. So, Tom, what is the dumbest thing you've done during quarantine?
Well, last night was dumb. So So the thing that I do that's dumb is my consumer habits are still like I'm a poor college kid. So I look for like sales and I think like, well, you know, I'm frugal in an irrational way. You know what I mean? It's like, so like I'll do stupid stuff. Like I'll buy like the real cheap sprinkler or garden hose or something like that. Cause it's like, oh my gosh, a garden hose. Like who's going to pay like $50? And then I always end up regretting it when my hose has a billion holes in it and I'm getting soaked trying to use the thing that I skimped on years ago. So I noticed my neighbor was aerating his lawn, had rented a Core aerator. This was Sunday night. And so I went over and I was like, oh, I was like, Alan, I would not.
That's a
mind.
Nice looking aerator you got there.
Yeah. It's like, would you mind if I, and here's the thing. I didn't realize this now. They don't only give it to you for like days or hours. They actually have like odometers on them with timers and stuff.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, well, let me look and see how many hours I have left. I was like, come again? He's like, oh yeah, it's fine. I still have 3 hours and I'm done. I was like, oh, okay. So those things are mammoth and they don't turn, so you get a heck of a workout trying to core aerate your lawn. But I finished aerating it. And my front lawn is a disaster. It looks like a war zone. So yeah,
I was telling you the other night, I'm in the same boat because I got this giant pin oak that loses its leaves like a month after everything else. And so it's always snowing when all the leaves are down. So I literally have just dead leaf patches and acorn, you know, trench pits in my front yard from this enormous pin oak. So that's my pin oak story by Nate Smith. So continue. Awesome.
Basically, I have all this grass seed that I've had for years. I probably bought this patch kit when it was like 3 for 1 or something. So I have seed that's been unopened for a long time. And I'm thinking, okay, well, I aerated it. Now I need to overseed. So then I go to my other neighbor and I'm like, hey, Pete, do you have a spreader? And he's like, yeah, sure. So I borrow his spreader.
It's like stone soup.
So I spread all the seed, and then it was basically like I'm looking at the weather forecast because, you know, there's no point in putting down seed if you're not going to really water the heck out of it, because it'll dry out really fast. And if the seed dries out or if the soil's too dry for the seed to get into wet soil, all you did was feed the birds and basically waste money. So I was like, 50% of rain, that's not great. I probably need to get out here and water what I just put down. So I've got three different types of sprinklers, okay? And I've got all these different hoses. So I go take the one hose that is on the front that I don't use that much, and I'm like, well, I use the one in the back. It's going to be a hassle to like disconnect all that stuff, so I'll use this one. And I had a suspicion that, you know, one of the sprinklers, maybe two of the three sprinklers, like, wouldn't work right. But I was like, okay, there's three sprinklers here. I'm going to find some way to get some water onto this area that I just overseeded. So the first sprinkler I put on has wheels, and it's like one of those ones that's like, you know, it's got like the rotating head or whatever. And actually, I was, you know, kind of pleasantly surprised because it was working. I was like, huh, why did I think like this thing, you know, didn't work? Because it's working totally fine. So I get out there, I put it down, I'm kind of setting it up, I'm adjusting it so that it, you know, it sprays the area that I want it to spray, and the head pops off of it and hits me. I'm not kidding you. Like, it literally just pops up in the air like it was something like bad, you know, comedy series. And I'm like, okay, now I remember why I thought this might not work. So I go on to the next sprinkler, which is more of like a heavy duty version of one of those like sprinklers. It's got this giant stake you stick in the ground. So I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure this was the one that I thought worked, you know, before I embarked on any of this stuff. So I was like, all right, we got this. Nope. It totally, like, did not work at all. I couldn't even get the water. Most of the water was spraying out of the connection versus going through the sprinkler. So I'm standing here and it's like, this is just a giant mess. Is this clogged or what's going on? So I'm like, well, this isn't going to work. So I have a third sprinkler, like one of the old, you know, 60s era sprinklers where it just goes leisurely kind of back and forth. And it looks like a rake, you know, on top or whatever. The pattern it makes is kind of like a rake. So I was like, okay, well, this thing is, it doesn't move. So it just stays like in one spot. So I was like, oh my gosh, this is such a pain. So I grabbed a sprayer, like a nozzle. I hooked that up and I'm like, I'm just going to stay out here for a half hour and literally just spray my lawn. And the combination of the hose with all of its micro punctures and the sprayer, the whole thing was just spraying water everywhere. And it was almost like a joke. I started laughing. I was like, well, I'm holding basically like a giant water bomb that's just, you know, going off in my hand like a sprinkler, or like a sparkler. I mean, it felt like 4th of July, but with water. And yeah, so. And the funny part about it was I was chatting with Nate before I started doing this, and I predicted this. I was like, well, I'm going to try to water my lawn, but I'm pretty sure I'm just going to end up getting soaked, and I'm going to fail at, you know, overseeding. And yeah, I think that's pretty much how this one's going to play out.
Well, I would love to tell you the dumbest thing I did during quarantine, but unfortunately, we are under a tornado warning, so I actually have to end the podcast and down to the basement. So we just had a tornado warning coming through, and I don't want the dumbest thing that I did was not go to the basement in a tornado
listening
warning.
To a terrible story by me while you got killed by a tornado. Yeah, please don't let that be the dumbest thing.
So we'll have pitches next time, but I want to thank Simo and Tom for being on this. And as always, go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Cavs, get downstairs.
Thank you for listening to Cavs the Blogs podcast. Check back soon for some more fun with your favorite bloggers.